Radio Free Palmer, 89.5 KVRF, presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio on KVRF. You can listen to us live on RadioFreePalmer.org and as a podcast, downloadable for just about forever on MushingRadio.com. We're continuing our Iditarod finishers interviews this week, and this week we have a recent champion of the Kobuk 440 sled dog race, which is up near the Kotzebue area. His name is Ken Anderson. Ken, how's it going? Can you hear me, Ken?
Yeah, I can hear you. It's going great up here. Thanks for having me. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, you sound great. We introduced you there. Recent winner of the Kobuk 440. Again, congratulations to you. What did that feel like? I know that's just this past weekend. Your season's wound down, but you got to go out as a winner. I got to congratulate you for sure, and I'm sure your fans do as well.
Yeah, it felt great. I had been going up to Kotzebue for either the Arctic Circle Sprint Championships. It's a 3-day, 25-mile heats event that's run in conjunction with the Kobuk 440 or the 440 for like the last, I don't know, 12 years or something. And I'd never won a race up there. I've been just about every place but first. And so it's kind of nice, you know, to finally win up there. And yeah, it was a fun, kind of a nail-biting race, exciting race. I had some close competition there, and it came right down to the end. And so, yeah, it was a great way to end the season for sure.
Can you describe what it's like up there in terms of terrain for our listeners that may be down in the lower 48? You know, a lot of people see a lot of coverage from, you know, the early stages of the Iditarod where there's a lot of trees and mountains and, you know, that sort of more hospitable type terrain. What is it like up there in the Kotzebue area?
Yeah, that's the Nana region, the Kotzebue area up there. It's just gorgeous, big open tundra country. A lot of it's run on the Kobuk River. It runs from Kotzebue. We go to Norvik, across Kobuk Lake to Norvik, over a little mountain range, over to Selawik Village, and then up to Ambler. And then we're on local trails from Ambler to Shungnak to Kobuk, and then we turn around, come back to Shungnak, back to Ambler, and then take a different route back down the Kobuk River to Kiana, and then Kiana to Norvik, and Norvik again. So there's a little kind of a loop in the middle, but yeah, it's just astounding country. It's just, yeah, not too many trees, and you know, sometimes it can be pretty nasty because if it decides to blow up there, there's nothing to slow the wind down. But it's just you know, the Brooks Range, Ambler is kind of right in the foothills, right there at the base of the Brooks Range. And so the further into the inland we get, you know, we get closer to that mountain range, and it's just, yeah, really, really beautiful country.
And this is a race that that requires you guys to fly in all of your dogs and all of your gear. It's, of course, off of the road system. How is that? How is that in terms of preparing for races where you have to do all of that extra logistics compared to running a race like, you know, like the ceremonial start and the restart here in Anchorage and Willow, where you can run right off of the truck and, you know, have your family and friends there without doing all of that flying and back and forth with the dogs?
Yeah, well, I don't think much about it now because I've done it so many times and I've kind of got my system down, but it was a little intimidating at first because, yeah, there's a fair bit of logistics, but the races, they're really hospitable up there, and they like to see, you know, teams from out of the area come in and race against the local guys and gals, and so they really facilitate everything. Like, they have host families, you know, that they'll put you up with, so you don't have to stay in a hotel or something. You're there with a host family, and that's part of the fun too, is getting to know the locals, you know. And they actually, they'll, you know, help bring your dogs from the airport over to the host family's house. Usually that's in the back of somebody's truck or in one of these. Things that you pull behind a snow machine, and it's really not that big of a deal after the first time or so you do it. And the dogs are kept there. You just have them on a little drop table. You bring a bale of straw and dig down some little holes for them and put the straw down in there where they get out of the wind if it should kick up and. You know, it all works out pretty good, and they always, you know, find a way to get you to the starting. People actually, if they're staying close enough to the starting line, you'll see people drive their teams to the starting line. If you're kind of on the other side of the town, you'll throw the dogs in the back of a truck or one of these hauler things and snow machine them over and then hook them up at the starting line. But, yeah, that race has been going on for like 25 years or so, and they've got their system down, you know, for making it relatively easy for folks. And then the airlines are pretty, they usually kind of, you know, sponsor the race in some form or another and give a reduced rate. It's still, you know, it's expensive to go up there. It's the whole shebang probably runs $3,000 to $3,500 to pull it all off, you know. But the money's good in those villages. Usually they have pretty good prize money, and typically, you know, if you finish, you're probably going to at least break even.
There's nothing wrong with that for sure. And you know, a lot of people think that, wow, you guys are winning all of this money doing, you know, finishing these races, Iditarod and Yukon Quest, and you know, they see that $50,000 paycheck. And we've talked about that several times on this show, but that's pretty much just what it costs to feed the dogs for the year, isn't it?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's hard to like justify all this financially, you know, unless you have some huge sponsors that are kicking in a lot of money, which very few mushers I think really actually have. It might seem like that, but or you know a lot of mushers are a lot of the top Iditarod mushers especially are really making their money off of the offshoot of that is tourism, you know.
Right.
You know, the Iditarod, it's great to get a paycheck there at the end, but a lot of people are doing tourism in the summertime to kind of really, you know, make a living at. I think most people are pretty happy if their kennel expenses break even. It's a challenge to put some money in your pocket after that.
And I definitely want to talk about what you do in the summer. That's a pretty interesting thing for folks that come up to Alaska. But before we get into that, I do want to congratulate you on your 2012 Iditarod finish. You came in 12th place, a very respectable position. What can you tell us about this year's Iditarod? You know, we've heard stories all over the board about it being a really tough race to being not so bad at all. How did you fare out there on the Iditarod Trail?
I didn't. You know, this is my 12th Iditarod, and it's kind of funny. Every time I get done, I kind of have to jog my memory because they just sort of all meld together, you know. But nothing sticks out. You know, the first, the short answer is I don't think it was that bad. you know, there was, like any time you go 1,000 miles through the middle of Alaska, you're going to get through these different last year was like perfect. I do remember that. That one stuck out. Hardly saw a cloud in the sky, and no real warm, excessively warm temperatures, and no excessively cold temperatures. This year we had, if I remember, it was kind of slow early in the race. We had some drifting snow going into Nikolai. But, you know, like, these things don't stick out because it's kind of all a part of what we do, you know?
Right.
And once you've done it enough, you know how to deal with the extremities. It just kind of comes as second nature, you know? And it's just kind of part of the job, I guess.
Right, right.
For lack of a better way of putting it.
And you know, when you've done, like you said, this is your 12th one, it does become second nature. And I know we've talked to several rookies on this show, and, you know, they're, of course, flabbergasted by the whole thing. And, you know, it's that whole wow thing. They haven't quite captured that whole Iditarod spectacle from beginning to end yet. And then, you know, you grizzled veterans like the Boosers and the Mackeys and the Neffs and all of you guys that have done these so often, it is almost kind of like a job. You know what to expect. You know what's going to go on here and there. And you know how to get from point A to point B, to put it pretty bluntly, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And that's certainly an advantage that veterans have. I remember my rookie year was 1999. I was pretty shell shocked. You know, I got to know him, and it was like, I ain't ever doing that again. You know, and it took me three years. I sat off 2 years and then came back in 2002 and ran. My wife ran in 2001, but it's just, there's kind of tricks of the trade, and once you've been through some highs and lows and come out of it, once you get back in that scenario of you know, like a low, once your things ain't going so good, you're not as, it's not quite as intimidating. You just kind of learn to, well, just put your head down and keep going, and, you know, tomorrow, sooner or later, tomorrow or the next day, things are going to be looking up, you know, and you're kind of forgotten about how miserable you were a day or two before. And it's just kind of, you go into the race expecting that, you know.
Right. Right. So Ken, we're talking to Ken Anderson, the recent winner of the Kobuk 440 and 12th place in this year's Iditarod. Can you tell us and our listeners, Ken, how you got involved with mushing? Kind of that, a little bit of a biography, if you will, about what in the world brought you to Alaska?
Well, excuse me, I'm fighting a little cold here. I actually grew up in Minnesota, and when I was... even before I was born, my parents had a little team of Malamutes. We lived in northern Minnesota. I was born in Grand Rapids, Minnesota. And they had like three Malamutes, and they, you know, dabbled in mushing a little bit. They'd actually run those Malamutes in sprint races, and all the, they were the most feared team on the trail, this Malamute team, because they're, I guess they're kind of nasty dogs. Not feared in terms of their speed, just in terms of their size and intimidation.
Right.
But my dad has some funny stories about that. But then they kind of, they quickly got out of sprint racing and started doing just winter camping trips, and up on the Canadian border there in the Boundary Waters. And so that was my kind of my exposure to dog mushing as a little kid. And when I was around the, in grade school, my dad bought me this book on the Iditarod, and, you know, he could see how much I loved taking these winter camping trips. I mean, this was like the height of my year, you know, as a kid, and, you know, we'd have these several night adventures. You know, sometimes my dad would, like, build an igloo if the snow was right, or we'd stay in a wall tent, and, you know, you can just imagine a little kid that, we actually lived in the cities. We lived in, at that time, we lived in Minneapolis, so these were just wild adventures. And so, you know, I found out about the Iditarod, and it just stuck in my mind, and it was just something that I told myself that I kind of made a promise at a young age, at that age, that someday I would run the Iditarod. And it was like about the only commitment I made to myself. You know, it wasn't like, you know, some kids at a young age, they say, okay, I'm going to go to medical school or I'm going to be a firefighter or a pilot, and that's what I want to do with my life. I didn't know, if I actually didn't think about making mushing a career necessarily. I just said, if there's one thing I know I want to do, it's run the Iditarod. So I eventually made my way up here in 1993 after a couple years of college, and volunteered for the Iditarod, and that year Jeff King won, and met Jeff in Nome, and he hired me there. His winter handlers were leaving for their other summer jobs, and he hired me to be his summer handler, and went and lived with him at his place in Denali Park and his family, and got exposed to racing that way. I also worked for a musher in northern Minnesota for a couple years prior to that, and he was a racer, and just started kind of handling for these different mushers and learning all I could from different styles. I worked for some sprint racers. I worked for the Earharts and Gareth Wright, that clan, Ramey Brooks. Worked with them for a year or so. I worked for Susan Butcher for a little bit. A guy named Tim White, who was kind of a famous racer from the Midwest, inventor of a lot of mushing equipment, worked for him for a while. He sort of specialized in stage racing, sort of middle distance racing, and just kind of wanted to learn everything I could before taking on the responsibility of my own dogs. And then my eventual wife Gwen and I met back in Minnesota at this kennel where I was working there, and we kind of came into mushing together, and eventually we broke off and started our own kennel, and we've been up here in Fairbanks since 94, I guess. And so we just got dogs from here and there, and mostly just kind of cast offs that didn't work for one reason or another, and we didn't pay much money for, and bred our own dogs, and now we kind of got our own line going, and Gwen raced the Yukon Quest in 1998, and then I ran the Iditarod the next year, and some of our fondest memories really of racing are several years ago, we really did a lot of traveling, and we've really raced all over the world. In 2006, we flew the team over to France and ran a team over there. We flew into Germany and drove into France. We were in Switzerland a little bit there, and Italy, and big race they have over there. And we've raced all throughout the Western Canadian provinces and the 10 Dog Mass Start Circuit, and ran the Bear Grease down in Minnesota, and the UP 200 in Michigan. We've run the Wyoming State Stop like six times, and Gwen won that one year in 2003, and just raced all over and traveled all over the North, and run races way up in northern Canada, way off the end of the road system, and up in like Inuvik and Aquavik up in the Mackenzie River Delta.
Ken, if I can jump in here just a second. You mentioned mushing all over the world. Do you have a favorite race that you have competed in? Maybe it's the Iditarod. Maybe it's just one of these small little races, down in the lower 48. What has been your favorite racing experience throughout all these years?
Well, I think I've been asked that before, and the race that always pops into my mind is Yellowknife. Yellowknife over in the Northwest Territories is called the Canadian Championship Dog Derby, and it's a 10-dog mass start race held on Great Slave Lake, and it's kind of an adventure just getting there. It's about 2,000 miles drive one way from Fairbanks.
Wow.
And there's always a big purse and really good competition. You know, Buddy Streeter was there this year with a couple teams, and it's just a super exciting race. It has a ton of history. It's been going on forever. And basically they line all the teams up on this small lake in town called Frame Lake. And, you know, everybody's got their teams lined up, and there's, you know, you can't hear anything because there's 20 or so teams, you know, barking away, and it's just a cacophony of noise. And there's, they have some, it's held in conjunction with this Trappers Festival. And they have some, the King Trapper out there with his, you know, all of his trapper regalia, his fur outfit, and he's got this big black powder musket. And he fires that thing off, and he uses a black powder musket because you can't even hear the shot. It's so loud.
Wow.
You just see the poof of smoke.
And that's when you go.
And then you pull the hook, and you just fly. It's so much fun. And they plow and trail out there on the lake for us, and then they plow an ice road right alongside of it. And so all these cars from town, all these fans just drive along, you know, and watch the teams going down the lake, and we get out down onto Great Slave Lake and head out. It's a 350-mile run we do Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and you know, it's fast and intense. It's a 13 to 15 mile an hour loping race, and you know, sometimes at the start the teams are, you'll have three, four, five teams running abreast on the trail wide open, you know, running 18 to 20 miles an hour, and it's just really awesome. It's just such a fun event, and I've been there, I don't know, five times or so.
I think those mass starts are not only fun for the mushers and the teams, but obviously for the fans as well. Because you know, when you do something like the Iditarod, it's drawn out over a couple of hours, and if you're sitting there trying to figure out when your favorite musher is going to go out, you may have to wait there for quite a while. But that's more like you know, other types of sports that you know, everybody starts at once and they whittle their way down to vie for position. Thinking of horse racing right off the bat here, I can just imagine. I haven't partaked in a race like that myself, but I can imagine how much of a thrill that is to be just barreling down the lake with 20 teams abreast across that lake there.
Yeah, it's so cool. That's what all the fans say. And you know, the Canadians in that neck of the woods, the northern provinces, the northern part of the western provinces, most of their races are mass start 10 dog races, 10 or 6 dog races, and that's kind of their own little circuit they have, and it's sort of this I mean, not that many people go to it. It's sort of obscure, but there's always really good prize money and amazing competition and lots of fan support and history around all these races. And those guys can't believe that we run these silly, you know, timed events where, you know, yeah, boring, you know.
Right.
One team goes and then another team goes, and it's just not, it's not as exciting.
So, Ken, we have about 7 minutes left. I definitely want to mention your guys' website. It's windycreekkennel.com. And we're talking to Ken Anderson, again, the champion of the Kobuk 440 this past weekend and 12th place in this year's Iditarod. Been doing the Iditarod. This is his 12th time, so we do have to congratulate him on that as well. So in the last few minutes, Ken, let's talk a little bit about what you do in the summertime. You and I talked off air a little bit, and you said that you work as a speaker for some guests that come in off the cruise ships and, you know, take the tour bus up there to Fairbanks. And you said it's the Wedgwood Resort, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yep.
So what goes on there for folks that are making that trek? And it's not a short trip by any means from, you know, from Anchorage or wherever you're coming up from the cruise ship to Fairbanks. That's a several-hour drive for sure. What can they expect up there in the Fairbanks area?
Well, the Wedgwood Resort is kind of the largest hotel complex there, and so yeah, most of their guests are cruise ship guests, but you know, whoever, and they just wanted to offer some you know, some entertainment for their guests, and their location is not like right downtown, and so it's a little bit out of the way, and so there's, you know, they've had issues of people, you know, saying, oh, it's hard to do anything here. And so they brought in different guest speakers like myself. And yeah, I just, it's a free talk. I give a slideshow on the Iditarod. I'll start with a little background on myself, kind of how I got into it all. And then I I have these great slides from the Iditarod, and some of them I took, and some of them I used from Jeff Schultz, the official photographer for the Iditarod, and we do question and answer, and most of these folks, it's their first exposure to dog mushing, and they're pretty fascinated, and it's been great for me because it's made a lot of fans for the race, and I have a little email newsletter I send out to people that sign up for it, and I send out updates to hundreds of people that have seen the show over the years, and it's a good gig. It's easy for me. I just drive into town and do it pretty quick. It's just an hour and a half presentation, and it works out really well.
So what is the prevailing question from all of these guys that have never been exposed to this the sport at all? Maybe they've seen something on the Discovery Channel or read Jack London, in school or something. But what is a question that is asked the most by these guys?
Probably people are curious. I get all kinds of questions, but, what do they eat?
Right.
Boring things like that. What do they eat? I get some strange ones every now and again, like how do they go to the bathroom and, stuff like this. All this kind of, every once in a while you get hit with a new kind of off-the-wall question, but, what do they eat? They're curious about lead dogs. Usually the thing that surprises them the most is that learning that, this isn't Jack London. There isn't one head lead dog up there that's the alpha dog that, beats up the other dogs and is thus the leader. There's several lead dogs on the team, and typically I have 10 to 14 leaders in the team, of the 16 I start with, and that always kind of surprises people. So I try to talk a bit about the dogs and the dynamics of interacting with them, and just the fact that there's all these different leaders because there's all these different scenarios that you get into. Sometimes you need to go fast, sometimes you need to just go down the right trail, going down the gorge, you don't want to go fast, you want to just stay dry, not fall in any holes, and so the lead dogs have to know G and Ha real well, and so.
So, Ken, are you planning on running the Iditarod next year?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm just, I've been, like most of us that are got this in our blood, we start thinking about it as we're coming into Nome,
Right.
Start thinking about next year as we're coming into Nome and what we're going to do a little differently. And looking forward to it for sure. I'd like to run the Quest 2 next year as well.
Well, I have to tell you, Ken, on our last day of our daily coverage of the Iditarod here on Mushing Radio, we picked my co-host and I, his name is Alex Stein. He's down in California. He and I picked winners for 2012 Iditarod. And I had, the 1-2 punch. I had you and Ramey Smith as winning the 2013 Iditarod. So that's my pick this early in the season. So I just had to get you on to tell you that.
Oh, right on.
So
thank you. Well, I hope I don't let you down.
Hey, no problem at all. So we have a couple of minutes left, Ken. Is there anything else you want to mention before we close?
It'd be nice if I could, give a plug for my sponsors. They're the ones that help us do all this. It's a hard thing to pay for it all financially, and so we have some sponsors. That'd be okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Right on. Well, kind of main sponsor is Red Paw Pet Foods, and they've sponsored lots of winning teams from Lance Mackey to Buddy Streeper and myself, and they've just been great company to work with, and it seems like more and more mushers are feeding Red Paw. But and then the Coast Guard has come on board with us this last year, and that was I just walked into that, and they were looking to get tied into a musher in just sort of a low-key way that was doing school visits, and I do some of those as well, and And I got the nod from them, and so that's been a lot of fun. It's been great getting to know the Coasties, and I've actually joined the Coast Guard Auxiliary myself because in the summertime we do a lot of boating. We have a little sailboat, and I figure I need to do some volunteering for once and give back a little bit and brush up on my boating skills. But on the Coast Guard is a sponsor of ours, and Wedgewood Resort also sponsors us, and dogbooties.com, they make these saddleback harnesses that John Baker designed with Jamie Nelson, and we use them as well. And also Northern Outfitters and Lone Wolf Sleds, and then Lupin Headlights. That was kind of fun to land that sponsorship because these headlights are just insanely bright. They've been designed for bikers and cavers, and they started using them over in Europe for mushing, and one of my Norwegian handlers had one, and I just fell in love with the thing. They're rechargeable, and they're just insanely bright. They're actually brighter than my diesel truck headlight.
And you know, Ken, that what's cool about those, and we're about out of time here, I don't mean to cut you off, but anytime you name your products Wilma and Betty, I think that says something about your company.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Ken, I appreciate it for being on the show today. I'll send you over a link by email or Facebook or something here in the next few days. But I do want to thank you for being on our show, and good luck next year. We'll be all rooting for you here at Mushing Radio for sure.
All right. Thanks a lot, and thanks for putting the show on.
Thank you very much. Ken Anderson, Kobuk 440 winner this past weekend. It's been a pleasure. We'll talk again soon. This is Robert Forto on behalf of Mushing Radio. We'll talk to you guys next time. Goodbye.